just wait a few minutes more while I figure out how to press play in a new way. And in the meantime, enjoy this misappropriate journey.
Kind of had this impulse where I really had to read the comments, you know, and I was really fascinated by the very irrational, extreme forms of rage that were there in the comment sections, often under the most mundane of topics. But of course, when the topic got onto something like feminism, it was 1,000 times worse. So I really wanted to get a sense of why exactly are people so angry here? And then after a while, why are they all using similar kinds of slang, similar kinds of language? And of course, it's because a lot of them were on the same kinds of forums.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hello and welcome to Women on the Line. I'm Aoife Cook, and this week's guest is Angela Nagel. Angela is a researcher, an academic currently based at the University of Limerick in Ireland. She's a fellow countrywoman, and she's speaking today on her area of expertise, which is anti-feminist internet subcultures. Angela, can you describe maybe quite broadly the landscape of, I'm going to say, online misogyny, and maybe tell us about a few of the prominent forums that are out there?
It's kind of jokingly referred to as the manosphere, which is the broader group of, you know, anti-feminists, so-called men's rights activists, forums. There's a whole huge constellation of sites broadly called the alt-right, the alternative right. Then within that, you have the nominally men's rights groups and all the various anti-feminist groups. When you hear somebody being called an MRA or a men's rights activist online, it's very unlikely they actually have any men's rights activist credentials, that they've been involved in, for example, like fathers' rights. You know, it tends to be a little bit juvenile and more about culture than politics, really. So you have something like the Red Pill, for example. The Red Pill is a reference to The Matrix. So it's all about kind of trying to see the world as it really is and not be like foolish men who go sleepwalking into marriages with untrustworthy women and this kind of thing. And then 4chan is very important. I mean, its heyday was quite a few years ago. Certainly 4chan B, which is a forum, the random board within 4chan. But it's hugely influential on internet culture more broadly. People probably all seen, for example, lolcats, which years ago was a little meme with a cat in the middle and it had text at the top and bottom. All the memes that we use now kind of imitate that style. And that came from 4chan. The hacker group Anonymous came from 4chan. But also, it is, for example, a place where DDoS attacks on feminist websites have been organized. That's distributed denial of service. It just means that a large group of people go and bombard a website until it shuts down. So the kind of pranking culture of 4chan has often been used against kind of feminist groups.
Hey, Elliot Roger here. I'm up in the hills in Montecito right now. It's truly a beautiful day. But, as I've always said, a beautiful environment is the darkest hell if you have to experience it all alone. And sadly, I've been alone for a very long time.
Okay, Elliot Rodger was somebody who recorded a lot of videos of himself and wrote a kind of manifesto. And he spoke about My War on Women. And Elliot Rodger went on to plot kind of a massacre, really, of a sorority house. And he said that he wanted his revenge on women for ignoring him and rejecting him sexually. Now, on the day, he couldn't get in to the sorority house, so he ended up shooting people on the street and was chased down by police until he eventually shot himself. And Elliot Rodger is referred to online sometimes as the supreme gentleman because he spoke about himself in that way. So Elliot Rodger became a person that was really hotly debated. For example, Laurie Penny and many others wrote opinion pieces about it at the time, you know, about his kind of war on women and his sense of entitlement that he deserved to get this kind of attention from women. And then also, of course, he became talked about a lot on men's rights forums, on the Red Pill, on 4chan. And really, he just became a way in which people ended up having these very important conversations about that sense of entitlement that does tend to pervade these extreme or militantly anti-feminist kind of forums. There's also, for example, a group called Men Going Their Own Way, which they pronounce MGTOW, which is a separatist kind of culture. It's literally about men deciding no longer to have any interaction with women at all, if possible.
Hi, everyone. I thought I'd take some time to share a message to all the women listening to me speak, as well as the women that have yet to hear me out. I'm sure by now as women you see men going your own way as a growing threat to your attempts to use men to do your bidding. Men are waking up to our slavery and leaving the plantation that you call marriage. We recognize that our biology compels us to provide and protect for you in return for the opportunity to have kids with you. But now you use the feminist courts to take this away from us. And so many of us are leaving and never coming back. In your increasing attempts to take more and more power away from men, you are all now feminists, every single last one of you. But ironically, it's feminism that will lead to your undoing and eventual downfall. It wasn't enough for you to enslave men by having us labor and toil in the workplace, building roads, building buildings, and all the other materials that you find around you. Instead, you thought that you could be sneaky and convince us to vacuum, wash the dishes, take care of children, in addition to farming the land and building the man-made world.
Angela, have you any sense of the numbers involved?
It is extremely difficult because a lot of cases, what you're looking at are forums like 4chan, which are completely anonymous. I mean, every user just is called anonymous. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the influence of 4chan is much greater than the number of people who actually go on there every evening. And then there's all the other sites, too. I mean, I would say it is relatively small groups of obsessives on things like men going their own way. I mean, for example, if you look it up on YouTube, there's a number of YouTube channels, but it is the same guys, you know, repeatedly making videos, giving advice to other guys who want to go their own way. So it is hard to make up the numbers. But for example, some of you might have seen Milo Yiannopoulos's campus tour that's been going on in recent months. Milo Yiannopoulos is a writer at Breitbart, which is a conservative American magazine. Mm. And Milo Yiannopoulos has been going around college campuses really challenging feminism, essentially, but I suppose intersectional feminism or Black Lives Matter and all kinds of things. So he goes there and he kind of offends everyone and the whole crowd gets whipped up into a massive row and, you know, feminists usually protest. But then a really loud, booming sound of guys shouting Trump, Trump, Trump starts.
Donald Trump.
Oh. And that's really interesting because I think this is the kind of moment where all of this stuff I've been looking at for years, which is weird and small and subcultural, and people think, oh, it's just a few weird people on the internet, has sort of started leaking into the mainstream in a big way. Because there's a direct line now between Donald Trump and these what would have been considered small, insignificant internet forums, you know. And Milo Yiannopoulos is kind of the link, I would say, in a way. He makes references to these things. When people ask questions from the audience, they know what the alt-right is. They know 4chan. They know all this kind of stuff. And the kind of stuff that I'm looking at is really his bread and butter. Mm. But he's a Trump supporter, you know, and they all seem to be.
I mean, would you have a sense of whether the people involved share many characteristics in terms of who these people are?
Well, what I'm really interested in is the fact that so much of it has sprung from a very geeky kind of culture.
Yeah.
Like in the past, we might have associated anti-feminist or sort of militant anti-feminist cultural politics with kind of jocks and macho kind of culture and stuff like that. So I think it's really interesting that the space that has really defined this whole culture that I'm talking about is very geeky and actually very kind of gender fluid, if you like, yeah. In the sense that 4chan doesn't have the kind of conservative anti-feminist politics of the past, which were typically about the family, anti-abortion and so on. 4chan has very libertine kind of nihilistic politics, and it's gender fluid in the sense that it can take in things like My Little Pony fans, and there's loads of gay and bisexual porn on there. There's loads of discussion of same-sex attraction among men. They also refer to each other as beta males, or you know, they refer to men who are not dominant as beta males.
On Wings, you're hearing from Angela Nagel, an academic researcher based at the University of Limerick in Ireland. Her area of expertise is anti-feminist internet subcultures. The interviewer is Aoife Cook.
You describe this idea of the beta uprising in detail. Can you explain what the term means and really what's going on?
Well, as with all things on 4chan, there's a tone that is used that is a kind of a joking, ironic tone. But the problem, I would say, is that they also mean it. And that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about. So when you try to talk about something that is going on 4chan, they always say, oh, you don't get it, it's a joke. But what I was writing about was situations where the so-called jokes on 4chan actually turned into, you know, real-life killings, real-life violence. So I talked about Elliot Rodger, who I mentioned earlier, and another killer called Harper Mercer, who also, it's believed that he had actually posted on 4chan just warning that he was going to do the shooting before the shooting happened. There's not absolute confirmation of that. But then after that, on 4chanb, after these shootings happened, they described them as like the beta rebellion or the beta uprising on 4chan. And they were really celebrating these shootings as a great thing because they were beta males kind of fighting back. And it's beta males fighting back against the women who are not sexually available to them, the women who reject them, then also, I guess, the jocks and the kind of popular kids. So I thought that was interesting in that they were actually recognizing quite proudly the link between real violence, typically against women, and these kind of forums. If you draw the connection, people say, oh, you're being puritanical, you're, you know, overreaching kind of, but they're quite happy to do it themselves, actually. They're quite proud to be associated with these kind of mass shootings.
So can you tell us what the term beta is and the beta uprising?
They mean a man who is not masculine, who is kind of small, not physically imposing, that kind of thing. So not macho, not masculine.
And the contrast to an alpha, of course, the idea of the alpha male.
And this feeds into also, they have a very kind of a social Darwinist view of the world. Mm. So they're big into the idea that women have a kind of evolutionary drive to be attracted to violent macho guys, and this explains why they're not getting laid. rather than in many cases, you know, I loved the Nice Guys of OK Cupid Tumblr that was around there years ago, I'm sure it still is, which was all about this phenomenon where these kind of beta males have all of these kind of elaborate Darwinian theories to explain their lack of success with women, but it never dawns on them that the fact that they absolutely hate and loathe women might be a part of the problem.
Maybe. Yeah.
Listen, you ladies are just a bunch of wannabe men. You wish you could live up to the strength and capacities of masculinity, but you can, you're just wannabe men. Even down to our muscles, down to our functional strength, down to the way the functional equipment between our legs, down to taking a we have this penis that we can just whoop out and pee standing up, but you little ladies have to sit down and tinkle like little princesses. You have to sit down so you can tinkle like little princesses, okay?
And how does that fit then with, you know, what you've seen is also kind of a acceptance maybe of queerness or some kind of new ideas around gender? How does that fit together, or is it just confusing and it doesn't make any sense?
I'm still kind of figuring it out. I mean, maybe some of this wouldn't be shocking to somebody who's 19, you know what I mean, who has grown up maybe in a culture where ideas of gender fluidity are very influential, and maybe it is partly an age thing or something like that, because I do find when I talk to people about this, younger people seem less baffled by the seeming contradiction of the very extreme misogyny and militant anti-feminism and kind of mixing with this very gender fluid politics. But in the past, we would have always thought, and certainly, you know, academic writers, for example, who theorize masculinity, tended to think that gender fluidity among men was a kind of antidote to traditional macho ideas about maleness that, for example, were all about kind of you prove your masculinity through not showing your feelings and even violence and war and things like that. and so we kind of always thought, or certainly those who theorize masculinity tended to think that if men were becoming less traditionally masculine, that this was a step forward or that this was necessarily progressive. And so it's interesting to see now that in a kind of moment where gender fluidity is talked about a great deal and is kind of celebrated in very mainstream platforms, even like Facebook, for example, in some countries offering a lot of different gender identity options, it's interesting that the really militant anti-feminism online is actually coming from these very gender fluid kind of cultures.
I mean, it sounds like your central argument and contribution to the feminist analysis or understanding of these issues is that the world of beta males is almost a new strain of misogyny, if that's fair enough. And this seems to be a challenge to some prominent feminist thinkers who regard this online world as the same old, using different technology. Would that be fair to say that you've come up against other feminist thinkers with this?
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, when I was writing the PhD, I looked for feminist writing on misogyny online, and I can't think of an exception. All of it was saying, all of it started off with a kind of a cyber-utopian perspective. So the idea would be that the internet is an inherently democratic, non-hierarchical space, you know, that flattens hierarchies and it gives everyone a voice and so on. So all very kind of cyber utopian stuff. And because they start out from that perspective, they say, well, yes, there's misogyny online. And this is a problem because it's old fashioned ideas anachronistically showing up on what should be this really utopian, brilliant space. And I think that's kind of what got me interested in this whole thing to begin with, because I was seeing that analysis and then I was seeing, no, actually, what's happening here is something different. It's something new. I mean, there's no comparison between a guy who goes on 4chan to share really hardcore and very gender fluid kind of pornography and, you know, like Peter Hitchens or some conservative who thinks we should return to the nuclear family and, you know, have good manners and, you know, go to mass every weekend. You know what I mean? So to me, I was thinking these just aren't the same thing.
Yeah.
There's something profoundly different about them. So just as an example, with the academic names, I would struggle to think of them off the top of my head. But for example, Laurie Penny, who's quite a major kind of a columnist and public commentator you know, so big on Twitter. She wrote a book called Cybersexism. It was an ebook for Bloomsbury. And she kind of repeated that idea quite a bit, actually. And I could see that she wasn't really able to square these things, because to me it seemed like on the one hand, she was recognizing that this misogyny isn't coming from the same old sources. It's coming from really weird, geeky subcultures. But then on the other hand, when it came to theorizing it, she was saying, oh, this is just the old traditional kind of ideas about gender breaking through. And every time one of these shootings, for example, happens that is linked to these kind of online cultures, you'll find an article or several even in mainstream publications saying masculinity is the problem. This is an expression of masculinity. And they don't realize that the spaces that they're talking about actually are kind of anti-alpha male in lots of ways. They're very hostile to, you know, jocks and any kind of traditional ideas about masculinity in a lot of cases.
Where do you think lies the most useful challenge?
It's a very hard one to say. I'm a little bit worried about the censorship angle. When I started the PhD, I would have been much more sympathetic to it, as in, although I wouldn't have approved of state censorship, I would have argued for example, private companies, social media companies, will say, doing more to stop this kind of stuff from happening. Now I'm a bit more skeptical of that, because I think it's extremely difficult to actually regulate these things. Mm. And often what happens is, in the process, you end up making the case for types of regulation that are actually going to be used much better by Erdogan and Turkey, or, you know, whoever it might be. I would be wary of making any kind of case for kind of a censorship angle online. I wouldn't, actually. I would oppose it, in fact.
Back then, I didn't know the dress code of a feminist. I mean, there are some that, you know, they go through the cracks, and, you know, you probably can't tell by the way they dress, walk, talk, etc. I mean, even body language is very important as well. But when you start to, you know, peep the game and realize how all of this works, you will see.
What role do you think these forums are playing in the lives of these guys? And, you know, are they all young men and it's a hobby, or is it a place to let off steam? Or, you know, is the role of it that it is a much deeper, a more dangerous breeding ground for misogynistic ideologies amongst kind of a minority, more hardcore group?
I'd say it's the latter. I mean, I'm sure there are lots of people who just go and browse these things and kind of, you know, dip into them. But there are also plenty of guys who on there who are, you know, absolutely obsessed. And, you know, I think the fact that it's kind of a bit of an American phenomenon is important too, because in the kind of dating world, there is a concentration of sexual opportunity among men that is greater than it is among women, right? So in other words, based on what people say in surveys and so on, there are a smaller group of men having more sex, right? And there are, whereas with women, the number is more average.
Yeah.
As in, the number of people that a woman has slept with is more average, whereas with men, it's more concentrated among a small group of men. And I can't help but think that is an influence on things as well. Why is that concentration greater in America than it is elsewhere? I think that's a question worth looking into. And it does strike me, I mean, you know, that, you know, America, I think, does, I mean, I was actually born in America and I was there as a child. America does have a much more competitive kind of social culture. I mean, I don't wish to kind of make excuses for these guys, but they're trying and with great frustration to make sense of a world in which there's a kind of a real sexual hierarchy that they're experiencing. And unfortunately for them, they're more or less at the bottom with. It's not, you know, something that their egos can really take in. And so they try to come up with all these kind of, you know, discredited Darwinian, social Darwinian rather, theories about why this might be.
So we're not saying, I assume, that the lack of sex is leading to this level of misogyny.
No, but I think it's the backdrop. It's the kind of social context that you would have to take into account. You know, and the high school shootings, I mean, obviously the availability of guns is the main thing there, but there's something else there as well. I mean, I do think there is a really intensely competitive environment in kind of American culture. The kind of free marketeers are always celebrated. But I think it does have these ugly manifestations too, where when people find themselves not only at the bottom of the hierarchy, but just not even in the game, kind of not even, you know, able to assert themselves in any way economically, you know, sexually, socially, and they find themselves in this deeply competitive culture, and they find it dehumanizing. But the problem is, they're not they could express that in all kinds of ways. They could be more critical of the hyper-competitive kind of free market ideology. They could be more critical of, you know, they could argue for, you know, a kinder society or a better society or a less competitive, brutal kind of society. But instead, this is kind of the form that it takes. Mm. So it's not that I'm saying, you know, that I'm giving a reason or an excuse maybe for why they're doing it. But I'm just saying, I can see that there are things that actually we should be critical of, you know, that they're in some way taking in, but it's coming out the other side as this really, really hideous ideology. I mean, I actually think, when it comes to the internet, I think the whoever is making the best memes tends to be winning. I know that's not a very edifying kind of thought, but for example, there was a time there for a little while where the kind of memes that that feminists were producing about these guys were absolutely hilarious. So for example, the Nice Guys of OkCupid thing was absolutely ingenious. It was so insightful about a personality type that women who were using, you know, dating sites were seeing all the time, you know, and it was better than a million academic essays at actually pointing out the contradiction to these guys, you know. Just in case anyone hasn't seen it, Nice Guys, OkCupid would pick out guys who had a profile on there who were saying, you know, I'm a really nice guy, you know, that's why I don't get all the girls. And, you know, if you like nice guys, you'll pick me, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then later on in their profile, you know, they'd be asked something like, would you ever date someone who was, you know, not a size 8 or some, or, you know, and they'd say no. Like, so they had this kind of self-conception as being nice guys and as being kind of beta males as well. But then when it came down to it, they actually had attitudes that were just as sexist as any kind of, like, you know, fraternity boy stereotype. The whole idea of these guys as being neck beards, for example, guys who, you know, have facial hair on their neck, to be very literal about it, but it's meant to imply a certain kind of guy, a trolly kind of guy who lurks around in forums and, you know, thinks he's kind of Nietzsche or something, but, you know, has all these, you know, these really sexist attitudes and tends to be very patronizing to other people and to women specifically. So I think that kind of witty, really clever, technology savvy kind of stuff is absolutely brilliant. And I definitely wouldn't underestimate the power of that. Some of it's quite cruel, but unfortunately, when you know, faced with these kind of cultures, sometimes you have to be a little bit cruel back.
Angela Nagle researches anti-feminist internet subcultures at the University of Limerick in Ireland. Her interview by Aoife Cook originally aired in Australia's national community radio series, Women on the Line, which podcasts on the community radio website 3cr.org.au. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our page wings.org for links to listen to recent and archival programs. We also have posts at Wings Radio on Blue Sky. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughan, author of the new book, The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. Women on the Line's theme music is by La Tigra. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hello. You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. This is your host, Miss Nikki, and it's time for her Infinite Variety, third Sunday of the month. I'm really excited to be here. I hope we're going to have a really great show today and have a lot of fun. So I had somebody very special record something for me, so I want to play that real quick before we get started.
Birdman, wake them up, Miss Nikki. Wake them up.